Data exists all around us, in every facet of our lives and jobs. With the multitude of possibilities, how can leaders best harness data to both improve employee experience and become more effective leaders?
One of the things that I really like to say to my stakeholders when I sit down with them is, okay, if we have a hypothesis, what are you going to do differently if we confirm this hypothesis, number one? And number two, what are you going to do differently if we don't?
That's people analytics expert Michael Walsh. Michael created and led the people analytics function at both Bloomberg and Fiat Chrysler. Today, he's global talent management and organizational effectiveness leader at Eaton. There, he's directly implementing his expertise in people analytics as an HR leader. Michael is a pioneer in HR analytics. Using data, he creates statistical models to inform business strategy and solve for common problems such as retention, succession planning, and more.
So many instances where business leaders have just been, you know, these are the aha moments. These are the light bulb moments where they say, you're kidding, right?
I'm Merrill McDonald, and my passion is helping people and organizations navigate the human struggle of change. I believe that when we relinquish control, we open up amazing new possibilities. This podcast, Let Go and Lead, is about what happens when we loosen the reins. In it, I speak with business leaders, academics, and creative thinkers to hear about their career and life journeys and gather what they've learned about change, transformation, and creativity along the way. I'm thrilled to have Michael Walsh with us. Michael, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
So I was particularly interested in talking to you because you're a people analytics expert, which a lot of us are interested in these days. Can you tell me, what is people analytics?
Yeah, sure. It's certainly a hot topic these days, both in the popular press and within organizations as well. And I think the definition of people analytics really depends on who you ask. I think if you were to ask 10 people, you would probably get 12 different answers. It really depends on kind of who you ask and where they might be in the people analytics journey. But the way that I like to really sum it up is that people analytics is using data that companies may or may not already have about their employees to help those companies make better decisions about their employees and better decisions about their business in general. So, a good example is that, in marketing, for example, the Coca-Cola salesperson may have stood outside of a grocery store wearing his Coca-Cola polo and giving out free samples and asking people, what type of soft drink are you going to buy when you go into the grocery store? And of course, the person would say Coke, and then they would go into the grocery store and they'd walk out with a case of Pepsi. That's kind of where we are right now with many people analytics studies, in that we're using self-reported data, whether that be from exit surveys or onboarding surveys or employee surveys. We're really kind of asking employees how they feel about various topics, and then we're using that as kind of the truth. And sometimes it in fact is. And that's what employees say. And then there's a whole nother side of it, which is what employees actually do. And so we can now, using certain statistical models, we can isolate those things that really matter to employees in terms of what things happen to them throughout the course of their employment relationship with an organization that may make them sell more product or may make them stick around longer and be more retentive, or may give them better performance ratings while they're in the workforce. And we can isolate those things now using statistics.
And as you were talking about the predictive analytics, and, I think it's a great point that as humans, we're not very good at predicting ourselves what we may do, or at least we don't want to admit it. What kind of data are you tracking that does tell you what you can predict in the future?
So, if you think about the HR systems in an organization and all of the data that we naturally collect, just being an organization, you collect everything from the employee's resume, which has a lot of data on it. And if you wanted to spend the time, you could go through and kind of codify the data that's on someone's resume. You have the person, like kind of where the person lives. You have how much money they make. You have their history of their salary increases and promotions or lateral moves, or you have who their boss is. You have all sorts of demographics about the individual. You also have where they sit in the organization. So a lot of times when I've done studies, one of the biggest factors to something like, you know, if we're trying to predict who would be good on a succession plan, for example, one of the biggest factors is where the person is located and do they have the networks within the organization. So are they located in corporate headquarters, for example, and do they have they built the networks to be able to kind of know the organization, understand how it works, those kinds of things. And so we have all sorts of variables like that, and then we can create our own variables as well. And they're you know, certainly in Europe and other parts of the world, it gets a little bit tricky when you start to create data for people and you have to get their consent and these kinds of things. But it's certainly not an impossible task and something that I've done before as well.
So one of the things I'm wondering is, what are the big issues that people analytics can really answer for a leader?
You know, I think that one of the most important things for a people analytics function, or for anyone who's doing analytics, is really to meet the organization where they are today. And so it really depends on what are the big issues for that particular organization. But I'll give you a few kind of quick wins that an analytics function can really get under. And the first one that a lot of analytics functions start with is retention risk. And what are those factors that lead to someone leaving the organization versus staying? And, you know, the idea here is that it's reasonably easy to do if you have the right tools and you have the right skills within the organization. But it also makes a big impact to the organization in terms of the amount of money and time they spend on recruiting replacements for people, right? And so anytime someone turns over, you have to go out and find someone else, and you have to go through the recruiting process, and that takes a lot of time and money. And so being able to, A, quantify how much time and money that takes, and B, figure out how to reduce the amount of time and money spent on trying to find those replacements is oftentimes a first out of the gate project that the analytics will tackle. Another pretty popular one is recruiting, and where do we get our most productive or highest performing employees? And so, you know, taking data from kind of resumes and interview notes and those kinds of things is something that a people analytics function can help to quantify as well. And then, you know, earlier I gave the example of succession planning. And, you know, if you're a business leader and you're looking for your successor and who's going to take your role after you move on to your next big role or out of the organization is something important that all leaders should have top of mind. And so analytics can help to kind of frame that pool of resources and help to find some successors as well.
And as leaders are thinking about tackling those issues, like, what are the steps that you use to get started?
I think number one is understanding the data that you have available to you. So you oftentimes, you know, HR sits on a lot of data about their people that is fairly easy to be mined. But understanding, A, what data do you have? And B, is that data any good or not? So if you have bad data, then you shouldn't be doing an analysis with it. And if you do have bad data, then you need to then clean that up and make sure that you know what you're putting into your models and into your analysis.
So tell me a little bit about what a people analytics team looks like. What do you look for when you hire people, and how do you put them together?
Oftentimes when you're first starting an analytics team, and this is kind of the role that I played at Bloomberg, both at Bloomberg and FCA when I was there, is your first hire out of the gate will typically be someone who is able to sell the concept of people analytics to the rest of the organization, number one, and develop kind of a vision and a strategy for the function. So figure out what are the first projects that we're going to do. You know, how are we going to message this to the organization so that they understand what we're trying to do with this quote new function of people analytics. And typically that person will have experience doing that before. Many times I'll see organizations hire kind of PhD IO psychologist types to lead the function because they have the technical skills, but also kind of see that higher level picture and are able to kind of put those pieces together. Once you start hiring folks underneath that initial hire, typically what you'll see is a statistician. So someone who is very, very well versed and has the technical skills to do all the statistical modeling and knows the latest and greatest when it comes to statistical software. And that's really their passion. You may have someone who is a database expert. So once you figure out what information you have, you need to have someone who can organize those data and figure out what's the best way to manage the data. And then you may have, you know, a few analysts who are kind of multiple, they can play in several different areas. The other interesting thing that I've seen quite often is that people analytics teams will use resources kind of part-time from other places in the organization. And I think that's a really smart investment in the very beginning. So you may have someone that's leading the function, but that person might lean on, you know, some of the folks in marketing analytics or product analytics who have those technical skills, who are able to build databases, et cetera, at first, so that you can kind of use those folks without making the big initial investment of going and hiring folks externally. I think another addition that's really good to the team and something that I've seen and I've used is a rotational role within the team. So you would take kind of an HR generalist or business partner type, HR manager type, and put them in the analytics team for a small assignment for several months so they can pick up some of those technical skills and learn how to ask the right questions, learn how to do a project charter, and then they would go back out to the business and support the business in that way. So it's really a great development role for the HR function as well.
How hard are these people to find?
They're tough, to be honest. They're not, you know, it's because it's been because people analytics has been a topic for several years, you're seeing more and more people have interest in it. But there are those of us who run in a pretty tight circle, to be honest. And, you know, we see each other at the same conferences and all these things. And so it's a pretty tough to find folks. Oftentimes yeah. You'll see people come from the business, into people analytics if they have an interest.
I know you've worked for several companies. Are there any trends that you've seen in terms of what the data is telling you?
It's funny because the answer is not really. And this is why it's so important to really do these kinds of studies internally. I mean, you can go to, you know, the latest Google search about what makes millennials, for example, turn over and why do they leave so often. But if you look at the data holistically, there's really not much evidence that shows that millennials want anything different than anyone else. And so that's just one example, but the millennials in one organization might be leaving for a different reason. And so you really need to do these studies in each place that you're at. And it's so important because there are so many contextual triggers or contextual differences between organizations that may make one person leave one organization, but make that same person stay in the other organization. And so those things all need to be considered. And, you know, doing a Google search on what are the you know, most common HR trends isn't going to get you there.
That's really interesting because, of course, we often hear people quoting those statistics and running their business by it.
Yeah, this is one of my soapboxes, to be honest. You know, I see so many very, very good intentioned organizations. It's simply because I think they don't have the capability inside to do it. And there are certainly many consulting firms out there that will help organizations do this, but it's not a cheap undertaking. And so many organizations will turn to the, you know, the Google search and the benchmarking, right? And we hear that all the time in organizations. And like I said, I think it's certainly well-intentioned, but there are so many other factors that you have to consider when, you know, broad brushing, applying these things to an organization.
And as you gather the data, of course, gathering the data is one thing, analyzing it's another, but then how do you share it with the organization in a way that they can act on it?
So this is one of the hardest parts about, and you know, I'll probably say that several times as we're talking today about the hardest part. But really helping the organization to digest the information is so critical. And I had an analyst that worked for me at one point in time, and she was a brilliant statistician, one of the smartest people I've ever known in my life. And she would go away and she would do an analysis and she would bring it back and she'd bring me a ream of paper on the analysis. And it was an output from a statistical tool that we used. And I would always tell her to go back and think about, if you had to put this on Twitter, what would you have to say? And so it's understanding the work that has to be done that goes into the analysis, helping the organization understand that up front so that when you come back to them with the headlines and what's really important, that they understand everything that went into it. I think that's number one. Number two, it's really boiling down the analytics into tools that the organization can use. And so I'll give you an example of a study that I did. And I mentioned it earlier, it was about succession planning. And so I worked for an organization at one point in time, and we did a study about their succession plans and what would be the predictive factors, whether they be organizational factors or factors specific to those individuals that would make someone a good successor for senior level executives. And so we did an analysis and we came up with several different factors. And once we did that, we were able then to apply those factors to each individual within the organization and come up with an individual kind of predictability index on would they be a good successor or not. And so, you know, I could have taken my algorithm, which is kind of what we boiled everything down to as an algorithm. I could have taken that to the organization and drawn out fancy statistical models on the whiteboards and put them into PowerPoints and pretty slides and things. But I knew that that wasn't going to work. And so instead, what we did was we developed a tool, a very simple tool in Excel, where our HR partners and our business leaders could simply look down a list of people and it would give them kind of red, yellow, green in terms of would the person be a quote good successor or not. Now, this was all preceded by interviews and qualitative data as well. So we weren't just kind of going off in a closet somewhere and coming up with an algorithm. But we then gave them the tool. And the way that I sold it to them, I said, look, just like on Amazon, when you buy something on Amazon and it says, you know, people who bought this product also bought these three things, that's exactly what we were giving you for succession planning. We were saying the people who picked this person may have picked these other three people, and it's for your consideration, right? We weren't making the decision for them. We were simply saying, hey, if you're going to cast your net out, you might as well look at these three people as well. And if there are going to be some people in the list where you say, absolutely not, I would never put that person on my succession plan, and there will be people on that list where you say, yeah, that's a really good suggestion, I think I will include that person. And then it starts the conversation, right? And so those are really the types of tools that I prefer to develop when it comes to these kind of analytics and trying to boil it down into usable insights.
So in that case, it sounds like you were actually finding people in the organization that may not have been considered.
Absolutely. And that's the beauty of, in this case, the beauty of statistics. And, you know, people think about analytics and numbers and we must be super precise, which we can be. But in this case, we wanted to introduce some of that natural error that there is in statistics, because it allowed us to cast our net wider and include people who may not have been on the plan originally. And then for those people who they said, no, I'd never put that person on a plan, we had the conversation about, okay, well, why not? And how can we develop this person so that they would be on a plan? So it really got into multiple facets of how do we develop the organization and how do we manage our talent in a way that can really kind of up the game when it comes to our succession planning process.
I just think it would be fascinating to be in a meeting thinking back to my corporate days and have someone come in and say, do you realize these candidates have the same success factors?
Yeah, it's truly eye-opening. It really is. I mean, there are so many instances where business leaders have just been, you know, these are the aha moments. These are the light bulb moments where they say, you're kidding, right? This is really going on. And that's one of the most powerful things about people analytics is that you uncover kind of cultural nuances that you may be doing every single day as an organization that you don't realize that you're doing and may or may not agree with. And analytics is a way to bring those to the forefront and have a conversation.
I would imagine that people analytics could really help with diversity and inclusion when it comes to succession planning as well.
Absolutely. The way that we can use people analytics from an inclusion and diversity perspective is just enormous. And, you know, one way is through succession planning. Another way is through kind of the hiring process. And, you know, we know, number one, we know that more diverse teams create better outcomes for organizations. There have been lots of studies done on how diversity of thought, diversity of experience, the experiences that people bring to the table really help to come up with the best solutions. And we can use analytics to make sure that we're really expanding our inclusion and diversity strategies. You know, hiring is another great example. And we know that, you know, people tend to hire in the likeness of themselves. And so we know that people have an inherent bias for how they hire talent. And using people analytics to highlight some of those biases is a great way to increase diversity in an organization, increase inclusion, and really make sure that you're making the decisions based on what you know about the organization. It's a great way to create more diverse talent slates, both for succession planning, but also for hiring as well. And there have been many studies done around kind of when we use analytics to create these hiring slates, we get a much more diverse slate than if we don't use analytics. And this kind of taps into our natural biases as human beings, but using analytics is one way to mitigate some of that risk and also to broaden the pool so that we do have a more diverse and inclusive organization.
And I would imagine, too, in large companies, it really helps because there are only so many people one would know. So it surfaces candidates that would be out of one's regular network.
Exactly right. Yeah. And so anytime you cast that net more broadly is a good thing, right? And so analytics can absolutely help us to do that.
And now, of course, at Eaton, you're in the HR and talent development role. So you're directly applying a lot of this. What are you doing now?
Yeah, so my job is really kind of all-encompassing when it comes to talent management and organizational effectiveness. So that's everything from, as I mentioned before, succession planning and performance management to organizational design, the employee survey we do a lot of work with. So a lot of these talent management type activities fall under kind of my purview. And one of the reasons why this role is so exciting is that I get to use my analytical hat. We do the analytics, and then I know something's going to be done about it because I'm the one that kind of commissions the analysis, right? So before, when I was in just pure analytics functions, although they were a lot of fun and I learned a ton, it was, you know, we got commissioned by a particular, whether it be business leader or HR business leader to do a particular project, and we would do it and then hope that something was done with it. In my current role, I now have control over what's done with it. And so we don't really waste our time doing anything that we're not going to do something with.
So I noticed that you also teach, which is interesting, both at Wayne State and the University of Illinois. You teach master's students, if I recall. Is that right?
That's right. Yep.
Yeah. And how has that informed your thinking?
You know, it's interesting. So the Wayne State class is kind of HR and employment relations analytics. And it's an on the ground class. So we meet at night, and it's professionals. So mostly professionals. There are some students, but a lot of the folks in the class are either current HR professionals or desired to be HR professionals. And having them in the classroom and their experiences and kind of what works for them and what doesn't has really been an interesting kind of journey. I think across the board, we need to do a better job in academia when it comes to kind of our entry level HR professionals, teaching them about analytics and teaching them not only the technical skills, because I think those are, you know, a lot of people go into HR because, quote, they're a people person. So when I hear that in an interview, I always say, well, that's good. We know that you don't want to be a veterinarian and work with animals. But other than that, that doesn't narrow it down much, because regardless of your role, you're going to be working with people. And so I strive in my class each semester to, you know, kind of change the way that these students think about data and analytics and in their everyday lives. And we're surrounded by data. And, you know, I think the important thing, one of the important things walking out of my class is that you realize how much data we generate and what we can do with it. Cause I think it can be really, really powerful. And, you know, we can use it in very interesting and good ways. What I think is more difficult to train and teach students in particular is how to ask the right questions.
What are some of the things you do to teach people how to ask the right questions? I think that's fascinating.
Yeah, it's really about practice in the classroom. So we do a lot of in-class activities. I don't like to stand up in front of the room and talk at the students. I don't think that that does much good, especially when it comes to both technical skills, but also this notion of how do we get to the root cause of the issue. And we start the class from, you know, kind of week one or week two, we start with what is a project charter? And so we think about these projects as if they were a research project done anywhere else, right? And so we start with a project charter and we start with, okay, what are we going to call this project? What are the data elements that we're going to look at within the project? Who are our stakeholders that we need to be talking to throughout this project? And who do we need to interview in terms of getting the right qualitative information that we need to look at in this project? Everything from those things to, do we have a hypothesis about what's going on here? And if so, how are we going to test that? What statistical models are we going to use to be able to test those hypotheses? One of the things that I really like to say to my stakeholders when I sit down with them is, okay, if we have a hypothesis, what are you going to do differently if we confirm this hypothesis, number one? And number two, what are you going to do differently if we don't? And if the answer to either of those questions is, well, nothing, then I really want to push back and say, okay, we should rethink doing this project because I'm not sure that it's going to be worth your time or worth our time, quite honestly. And so, you know, understanding where those stakeholders are coming from and really kind of helping the students to understand how to ask those questions. And we practice in class and they ask me and I pretend like I'm the stakeholder and all these things. And then we pair them up and do those exercises together is really, really important.
I wish I could take your class. That sounds fantastic.
Anytime. You're always welcome.
So the name of this podcast, as you know, is Let Go and Lead. I'd just be curious what you think leaders need to let go of.
I think that the number one thing that leaders should let go of is their infallibility. I think oftentimes leaders get to where they are either because they're a very good technical expert. Oftentimes we see them get promoted to leadership roles or, you know, they've performed really well in the organization. And I think somehow throughout that process, many leaders forget that everyone is vulnerable. And I don't think leaders show vulnerability enough. And it's one thing that I really strive to do with my team, and I'm very open and honest. And it's something too that I want to teach Charlotte. So she's our 2-year-old daughter. And my wife, Christine, and I really think that being vulnerable and open and honest about your feelings and those kinds of things are very important. And I'm not saying that you should go to work and cry. I don't think that's the answer. But I do think it's okay to say, I don't know. And it should be okay for the leader to say, I don't know sometimes and figure out the information and what we need to figure out. And I think leaders need to create those environments where it's okay for their employees to say, I don't know. And for their employees to come back and say, look, we don't have the answer today, but we're going to go get it and figure it out. And this is where kind of the data and the analytics come into play too, right? Which is, not only are we going to figure out, but we're going to figure it out the right way. And we're going to figure it out in a way that's empirical and that we can test and these kinds of things as well. So I think letting go of infallibility is really important.
Well, Michael, I want to thank you for your time. This was really fantastic. And thanks for joining us on Let Go and Lead.
Great. Thank you very much. It was my pleasure to be here.
Michael's work really got me thinking about the cornerstone principles of a solid people analytics practice. First, you must begin by asking the right questions. Take the time to define your scope and what you're solving for. Second, define your hypothesis and test it with your business partners. And determine the actions you'll take depending on the outcome. If the answer is none, move on to the next project. Third, understand what data is available to you and whether it's good, clean data. Solid data is critical to any people analytics program and project. Fourth, meet your organization where it's at. Every organization has opportunities to make inroads in people analytics, but the maturity level of each organization is different, and that's okay. Thank you so much to Michael for joining us. This is the final episode of our first season. Thanks so much to all of our guests for sharing your expertise. And thanks to our listeners for being a part of this community. I'm so grateful to you for joining us. To stay connected and automatically receive our next season's episodes, please subscribe. In the meantime, visit our archives, discussion guides, and more at letgoandlead.com. Thank you again, and until next season, let go and lead.